Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here, and our guests today are experts on seeds. One of them is Bjorn Bergman. Bjorn is head of marketing and communications at SeedLinked. And Bjorn, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Larry. It's a pleasure to be here. Yeah,
well, great to have you here. Craig LaHoulier, our other guest, is the author of Epic Tomatoes, Growing Vegetables in Straw Bales as well, and he is the curator of three tomato seed-linked seed collection experiences. And Craig, welcome to you again.
Thanks so much, Larry. Wonderful to be here.
So as we talk with these experts, we'll start by talking about the seed-linked program, how it works and how you can join. And then we'll take your questions about growing vegetables as well. And you can join in whenever you want. Do it right now if you want. So the number is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Bjorn, let's start with you. And before we talk about the new SeedLink Marketplace, maybe give us an overview of what the organization is all about.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for asking. So yeah, SeedLink is a startup business based here in Wisconsin, and it's really centered on seeds, what we're talking about today, and what I'm sure a lot of people on air really love, because it's the foundation of growing all those delicious fruits and vegetables that you get to enjoy during the season. But SeedLinked is a mission-driven business, and our main goal is to give growers, whether you're a beginning gardener or an experienced farmer, tools to find seeds that are going to grow well for you in your environment. So that's kind of one of the big core things. And the other piece is that we really want to create a hub, a way for everyone in the seed system, whether it be seed breeders, seed companies, researchers, farmers, gardeners, chefs, and eaters, to communicate and collaborate around seeds, to help find better varieties, help find ones that taste better or work better in cuisine in different ways. And so we just want to create this hub and a bit of more transparency around seeds so that everyone can win.
You know, I think about the number of seed catalogs that, of course, I get, or emails and so forth with them online, and I'm thinking, why do we need an organization like this when we have so much information?
Yeah, that's a great question, and really one of the reasons that this the business was born. And when I think about SeedLinked, I like to think about my seed buying pre-SeedLinked and how I buy seeds today, and how that has changed. And like Larry, like you mentioned, we get all of those seed catalogs in the mail, and maybe in January or February, or even right now, we're spreading them all out on our dining room table and perusing through the catalog and circling ones and trying to figure out what we're going to do. And we make decisions based on maybe what's grown well for us in the past. Maybe our friend recommends it. Or maybe we're just making a decision based off of the picture, the description.
I've done that.
When we think about that way of buying seeds compared to how we buy anything else in this day and age, whether it be a bicycle, a pair of shoes, some clothes, we can go online and find reviews for those products before we buy them and see how people that have actually used them feel that they work for them. When it comes to seeds, there really isn't an equivalent of that. There isn't a good space for performance data. And so SeedLinked as a business was really born out of this idea of creating a standardized way to have performance data on one site, on our website, seedlinked.com, and give people free access to it so that they can make better seed decisions. And what I always like to think, like, I love spreading out all the catalogs and looking at all of them. But when we compare it with everything else, it's kind of like this outdated model. Everything else is online. And SeedLinked is really trying to bring the seed space and seed buying into kind of the 21st century and connect it to data and help people be more successful.
Bunch of crowdsourcing going on there.
Yeah, definitely.
I watched your video, and one of the things that I really enjoyed was a comment from someone, I've forgotten who in the video, who said, it's crowdsourcing at its most delicious.
Yeah, that was Kat Becker. She's a farmer up in central Wisconsin. That was in our video. But yeah, it's really unique. And one thing that you mentioned, Larry, was our marketplace. And that's kind of been a lot of years coming. And so just to kind of step back a little bit, Seedlinks started running variety trials across North America in 2019. And so we have software that, like seed companies and different trialing organizations like UW-Madison can use to send varieties to gardeners and farmers, and they grow maybe like four kinds of cherry tomatoes, and they rate them on a variety of different traits like flavor and yield and disease resistance. And so since that time, we've had about 5,000 different growers participate in trials, whether they are variety trials or tasting trials. And we've amassed about 100,000 reviews, pictures, and comments for all of these different varieties.
Amazing.
And they are now available on our Seedlinks marketplace. And so our marketplace, anyone can go there. There's not a fee to go on there and access the data. But you can search 13 different seed companies are listed on our site. And you can search, you can compare varieties. You can just look for reviews in your hardiness zone to see how they do. Maybe where I live, I'm in Viroqua in zone 4B, and I can look for reviews for varieties kind of just tailored to where I'm growing. And then you can actually buy all your seeds from 13 different seed companies just on our site. Oh. And so it makes seed shopping super slick and easy, and also gives you more tools to hopefully make a better seed choice.
Yeah. Craig, let me get you involved here. Talk about what you do for Seedlinks.
Well, last year, as you mentioned, I had the pleasure of curating three sets of tomatoes that I get to choose. And so we had a lot of people growing out. Three of them were slicing varieties. Three of them were paste varieties. Three of them were cherries. People all over the country. So that was a lot of fun. Now, one of the things I want to do is just come back to something Bjorn said and put this in perspective. COVID, the last 2 years, has created a host of gardeners. And for those who are involved in garden education like me, the most important thing is to ensure that COVID gardeners become forever gardeners. Mm-hmm. And gardening is one of these things you can jump into it with great enthusiasm, way too deeply. And if you get discouraged, that may make you decide, I don't want to garden anymore. So the beauty of Seedlinks, at this time where we can grow over 10,000 different types of tomatoes, if you look at the Seed Savers Exchange and the range of seed catalogs, it helps people understand that where they grow, the climate that they're growing in, will significantly impact the success of particular varieties there. So any kind of a tool that helps gardeners succeed will make them want to grow forever, and they'll save seeds and they'll pass them on. So I have a real vested interest in what Seedlinks is doing. Additionally, having led a breeding project that's put 145 varieties out there, when I get asked, what's a great dwarf for my area? Prior to a tool like Seedlinks, I really wouldn't know, because our varieties have been grown in a very scattershot manner all over the world. But what we don't have is the central database to tell us Dwarf Barrel Beauty, people in Vermont love it, people in Florida struggle with it, people in Arizona, et cetera, et cetera. This is not easy information to collect, or it hasn't been in the past, because most people do not like to fill in surveys. They get busy with seed saving and eating and processing. So Seedlinks is a beautiful tool to help enable the capture of information that all of us will find extremely valuable to use going forward.
Bjorn Bergman is head of marketing and communication at Seedlinks, and Craig Lahoulier is the author of Epic Tomatoes and also Growing Vegetables in Straw Bales. I'm talking with them both about The SeedLink itself, the SeedLink Marketplace, and of course about seeds. So I hope you'll join in. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Talking about seeds on the program today and how to pick the right seeds. We're talking a bit about SeedLinked with our two guests today, Bjorn Bergman and Craig LaHoulier. And I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments as we move along today. Number to call again, 1-800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Can you talk a bit more about how the interface works? I think people are wondering, how does a visitor kind of use the website?
Yeah, I can definitely touch on that. So the marketplace itself, or the seed search, you just go to our website, and it functions like any other marketplace or online shop that you're going to use. One of the cool things about it is we've tried to put a lot of filters on the site that can be really helpful for growers. And so if, say, like, Larry, you want to find the best tasting cherry tomato or something rated on SeedLinked, there's a way to select the flavor trait and filter reviews by flavor. Or if you're looking for the top yielding carrot, you just want tons of carrots to process and store in your fridge, you can look for the top yielding carrots. We have other filters. One of those that COVID definitely added to was an in-stock filter. There was a lot of trouble finding particular varieties. And so we have a filter on there just to search for in-stock seed. So if you're like, I really like growing a particular variety of tomato, and the usual seed company that I buy it from doesn't have it anymore, you can find other sources, at least from the 13 seed companies that are listed on our site. Another filter that we have that we're really excited about is an organic filter. And we think that there's a lot of utility for like certified organic growers to do their organic seed search on our website if they're looking for those varieties. And also if gardeners really just want to filter by organic varieties, they can do that. So checking out all of those filters, and then you can just click on a variety. And like I said, there's reviews. You can look at all of the reviews by specific traits. We crowdsource images from users as well. And so if people uploaded images when they reviewed the variety, you can look at those pictures that they shared. You can also look at the written reviews that they shared as well. And so that's our marketplace. The other piece that you've mentioned a couple times, Larry, is we have these collaborative trials that people can be part of, which is really the foundation of what SeedLinked is. And I'll just talk a little bit about that, because that's where all of the reviews on our marketplace come from, are those collaborative trials. And so there's different organizations that will run trials. Some good examples for folks around here in Wisconsin, Seed Savers Exchange uses our trialing software to test out new varieties that they might want to add to their seed catalog. And so I think this year they sent seeds to 473 different growers across the United States to test out new varieties from their seed bank that aren't quite in their catalog. The top performing varieties from these trials, they're going to add to their catalog. And I've been a part of this program personally, even before I started working for SeedLink, and it's a really fun way to get to see new things and have and be involved in that process. Another organization, UW-Madison Seed to Kitchen Collaborative, Julie Dawson's lab uses our software to run variety trials. And so there's organizations across the US and North America that use this software. And unfortunately, most of those organizations have already set up their trials and got people involved in them and have sent out seeds. I think I got my seeds from the Seed Savers trials the other day. There are a couple trials. If there's some gardeners out there that are interested in participating, there's a University of Minnesota broccoli trial. they're looking at disease resistance for broccoli varieties in the upper Midwest. And so if there's some upper Midwest growers that want those trials are open. And then there's another spinach seed trial. There's a company that's coming up with a new chemical-free seed treatment to help with germination. And they've reached out to us and they're running a spinach trial just to see how that treatment works. And folks can learn more information about these by going to seedlink.com. And in the upper right corner, there's a button that says trials. And there's a page that folks can register for these things and become involved in the different trials.
Well, let's say I've got, I'm thinking, well, somebody's got a 10 by 10 garden. I mean, can somebody with even a garden of that size be involved in this kind of thing?
Oh yeah, 100%, 100%. I think what's so empowering to me as a gardener about SeedLinked is that so often when we look at research and whatnot, we kind of limit that to people at universities and like taking lots of notes and whatnot. And our goal at SeedLinked is to really harness the power of all those knowledgeable gardeners out there. Everyone has important information to contribute. And with SeedLinked and with these variety trials, we can kind of tap into that. A lot of the variety trials are pretty simple. There can be different types of them, but most of them, you just grow three different varieties of a crop and maybe do like two or three plants. And so if you're doing like spinach, that's really easy to do. If you're doing something like tomatoes, that might take up more space than you want, or if it comes to squash. And so if you do a trial that has a smaller footprint, that can be totally feasible from a gardener's standpoint. I know that for me personally, I have a little free garden in my front yard. It's like a little free library, and it's 10 by 16 right on my sidewalk in Viroqua. And every year I just take varieties from trials and I put them right on my sidewalk and ask for feedback from people. And so this year I'm going to put a Seed Savers cherry tomato trial right on my sidewalk. Ask my neighbors for feedback from my little free garden. And it's just 10 by 16. It's little. And so we welcome anyone to participate. We think everyone has a space to contribute data and contribute their experiences on our platform.
And Craig, how does it work for you? I tell us about sort of your operation.
Well, my operation really is I talk to a lot of gardeners about gardening, and I answer a lot of questions about it, because in being someone who has an obsession with tomatoes, there is a particular mystique about tomatoes, where I think probably 95% of the gardens in the country have them as one of the absolute centerpieces for the summer plate. And so it is also, in a way, it's like growing roses, in that in many regions, every disease and every critter and every weather irregularity impact the success of your tomatoes. So you can actually make quite a career just trying to guide people through succeeding with tomatoes, for sure. But really, this citizen science thing is so important, and we would not have done our dwarf tomato project without essentially just tapping. Right now we're up to 1,000 people all over the world. Some of them could only grow a few plants. Some of them can grow 15 or 20 plants, but every piece of data can be used, and it's important. And I just have to understand, if somebody's only growing one of a variety, I have to process that information a little differently, because I won't be able to get a handle on how stable it is. Whereas somebody who grows 10 of that same seed source will get to know if it's stable yet, or if you're still seeing a lot of variability. One of the things I wanted to ask Bjorn as clarification, are all of the seeds available in the marketplace open pollinated, or are there hybrids in there as well? Because I think there is no wrong way to grow a plant. You can grow hybrids, you can grow open pollinateds, and of course all heirlooms are just a form of open pollinated. But I think just setting the expectations on the kind of seeds they would find in your marketplace would be place would be really helpful. So they probably wouldn't find Sun Gold or Big Boy or some of the other popular hybrids, right?
Yeah. So we have seed companies that are involved that have a lot of hybrids. We have some seed companies that are just committed to heirloom open pollinated. There's some companies that are just focused on a particular region in the United States as well, and being regional seed companies. So we have seed companies of all types and sizes. Mm-hmm. You can find your standard hybrid varieties. You can find a super unique variety that, like one example is a pretty small seed company, Wild Mountain Seeds in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado. They do tons of seed breeding and have some really cool things. But you can find those super unique things, or you can find those things that you've come to depend on all the time. And
great.
Yeah, like Craig said, there's no wrong way to garden. We just want to have a way for people to explore all the options and really find what's going to grow best for them and maybe find something new and exciting as well.
So typically, how do you, I mean, if I was going to be part of a trial, for example, how would I mean, would I receive, would you send me seeds or the companies? How does that work?
Yeah, so once folks sign up for the trial, they'll get a couple emails. They need to create a SeedLinked account, and then they'll get automatic emails from the SeedLinked platform. And essentially, the trial manager, whether it's a seed company or a research organization, will send you seeds, and then there'll be a part on your track tab on SeedLinked where it will have the varieties, it will have what traits you need to evaluate. And then there'll be a way for you to upload pictures, share comments, enter dates for when you plant it, when you harvest. And each trial manager is different. They're going to ask you to plant a different number of plants per variety. And you just kind of have to follow their directions on what they're looking for. But it's for me as a gardener that likes to experiment with things, it's been a lot of fun to be involved with trials. I think last year I was like involved in like 15 or 16 trials from different organizations. It's a lot to keep track of, but it kept things very new and interesting.
I would think so. How big a property do you, where you, I mean, for that many, that's, you need some land for that.
Yeah, I garden. We have a garden in our backyard, and our backyard is like 60 by 60. And most of that is annual garden space. And then I have another garden on the edge of town, which is maybe like maybe a quarter acre or eighth acre of planted area or something like that. So I'm a very enthusiastic gardener. That's where I'd put myself.
No kidding.
But it's pretty easy to participate in trials, though. One thing that's really helped with trial participation, I used to do this before I became involved in SeedLinked, is back in those days, we just had like paper forms to fill out. And SeedLinked has apps for both Apple and Android devices. And so you can just go right in the field and stand right over the crops and just enter your reviews right into the platform. You can take pictures of the varieties while you're standing there. It makes participating in the trials much easier from my perspective. And that's why I participated in 16 of them last year.
It'd be a lot more fun too. I mean, to me, I'd rather sit there with my phone or my little computer and be marking that information off. And then it's right fresh in my mind. I'm looking at it right now or tasting it right now.
Yeah, definitely. And another piece too that we launched last year is we have a community feed part of the platform. So anyone that's part of a trial is involved in a group on SeedLinked, and they can share photos and have discussions and ask questions there as well. And so it kind of creates a little community amongst people that are in the trials too.
Bjorn Bergman and Craig Lahoulier, our guests today, they are connected with SeedLinked, and we're talking about the program and also picking the seeds. We're talking about some of the trials. And certainly if you have questions, vegetable garden in particular, related questions, I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Ideas@wpr.org. A listener emailed in. She has a raised bed with growing medium recommended for container gardening. That's what she's got. She amends it each year with fine compost. And she's wondering if she should also add any other fertilizers. And if so, how much? What do you guys, what do you think?
It would be really good to know what she's growing, because different crops have different levels of how heavily they feed. For example, tomatoes are quite reasonably heavy feeders, particularly in a raised bed where you're probably watering more to keep the plant stress-free. You may be leaching some of the nutrients out of the soil with that additional watering. So some good things to know is how hot is it in the area? How often do they have to water? What I often tell people to do is read your plants, and tomato plants are really one of those types of things that tell you when they're happy or not. So if you're getting wilting plants in the middle of the day, it means they really need water if you want to avoid blossom end rot, because that stress will be the way to make your tomatoes get those dark spots on the bottom. If the foliage is starting to turn a pale color, it means they probably need a boost. But just those three numbers, NPK, the three numbers that are after any types of organic or traditional plant foods, just a good balance with regular feeding, and just look at your plants. But if you withhold regular feeding, your tomatoes will probably disappoint you a little bit in what they do for you. Other crops, Bjorn, I mean, corn is an extremely heavy feeder. I have the feeling that squash and melons may be quite heavy feeders, where something like lettuce and herbs, where the roots stay closer to the surface, they're probably not so heavy. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I think Craig's point about what you're going to grow there is really, really key to that perspective. It's funny. I've been gardening on my own for 12 years, which is a lot less than Craig. I know that, a lot less than Larry. But I like finally did my first soil test last year to get in, get that perspective. And you don't absolutely need to do soil tests, but if you're really like having problems and really want to be like, what's going on here? My tomatoes aren't growing. It really is quite easy, especially through UW Extension, I believe, is where I sent my soil test to put a bag of soil together and send it. And it's not that expensive. It's like $20 or something. And you can mark on there what you're growing, and they'll usually give you a recommendation of what kind of things needed to get added, so that it's often a better space. So if you continually have problems, I'd highly recommend just taking a dive and doing a soil test. It's very well worth it, and it's a very reasonable service for its cost, especially if that means that you get a ton more tomatoes or a lot more lettuce or carrots. It's very worth it.
I like to grow mine in straw bales, so I've had really good luck with that, and we can talk some more about that later. I have fewer problems with disease, and I get good crops, and anyway, we can talk some more about that, but I want to get to the phones here. Akel and Sugar Camp, will go to you first. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. When I was young, my mother had a garden all the time, vegetable garden, and she used to grow these yellow pear tomatoes. They were the size of a medium small Roma tomato, and the only yellow pear tomatoes I find now are these like cherry tomatoes. I was wondering if you have seen this tomato.
Yeah, the variety yellow pear, it really does date pre-1700. It's one of our very, very oldest varieties. And there are seed catalogs that will carry yellow pear. I think Seed Savers Exchange carries one called Beams Yellow Pear. They're cute little. They have tomatoes that have a little neck. They're bright yellow. The plant produces like crazy. And I have a lot of tomato growing friends that just thinks they're like candy. They love to eat them. So, Bjorn, I know I've seen them in several seed sources.
And name them again, because people are now thinking, oh, what did he say?
Yeah. Well, there's yellow pear, which shouldn't have, but there are certain named types of them. One of them is called Beams Yellow Pear that was listed in the Seed Savers Exchange yearbook for quite a few years. But yeah, shouldn't be that tough to find. People, you know, people can email me, and I'm really good at hunting down sources, but Bjorn may have his eyes on a source as we speak.
Yeah. So I just went to the Seedlink website and typed in pear and saw what came up, and Craig hit the nail on the head. Beams Yellow Pear from Seed Savers Exchange came up. And so that's one thing. There's a black pear and an Austin's red pear as well on the Seedlink website. So I feel like this is a great example when someone's can't find a variety anymore, going to Seedlink and looking for it, especially because Seed Savers Exchange varieties are on Seedlink. They're really big into older heirloom open pollinated varieties. It's a great way to search out those older varieties and find sources for them.
And people are wondering, well, the app, I don't have the app. How do I get the app? What's it named and so forth?
Yeah. So the Seedlink app, you just go to the App Store for Apple products or Google Play for Android devices, and you just type in Seedlink, and that's linked with an ED on the end, and it should come up, and it's free to download, and folks can register and look at the app that way. And if you have a desktop, you can just hop on seedlink.com and search for seeds and use our seed search and search for whatever you're looking for. And hopefully that will help out.
Cal, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's turn to Paul in Oak Creek. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Yeah, I've got a little bit off topic, but I've got a front yard that's like 25 by 50, and it just grows grass and dandelions. And I'm thinking, instead of doing that, how can I make like a large flower vegetable garden?
Yeah. So, Bjorn,
what do you think?
Yeah, go ahead, Bjorn.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. As a person who is a little bit younger and has just bought a new house and skipped around from garden to garden, I've built way too many new gardens in my life. And thankfully, I'm at a point now where I have some more stable gardens. But in the best world for establishing a new garden, I think the easiest thing is to like cover it the fall before to try to kill everything. And I am completely guilty of not doing that. So giving that advice is tough. But my current backyard, we bought the house in January, and I just ended up getting a tiller and tilling all of the soil. And my goal was to keep, there's some people that remove sod to build new gardens, but I think all of those great nutrients are in that really top layer of soil, especially in the sod. And so if it's possible to incorporate that sod into your garden, is really important. I guess the best way would be cover it with plastic or some sort of tarp the fall before to try to kill all the grass. And if you need to, tilling it, Craig looks like he has something.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Craig.
So you could combine what Bjorn just said with testing out that site for how it works by putting your covering down to kill the grass and the dandelions, unless you want to make a lot of dandelion wine. My grandfather was well known for his vintage. We won't talk any further about that. But put some straw bales, put some containers. So you could actually kill two birds with one stone. You could convert the dandelions and the grass down to where it's ready to dig up the following year. At the same time, test driving that area to see what the sun is like and how things grow there. You'll also have a bit of a neighborhood conversation piece, because people would come in and ask what you're doing, and you'd get to explain what straw bale gardening is or container gardening. This sounds great for me. I think you have lots of options and lots to do that you could have fun with.
So there you go, Paul. And your book, by the way, you've written a book on straw bale gardening, have you not, Craig?
Yeah, and I've also got a link that I wrote for Gardener Supply that I can send out that really just summarizes the key points. But I think of a straw bale as 2 20-gallon containers, meaning you can get great success and enormous yields. It really is just a case of finding a good source and doing putting it through a two-week treatment to get to essentially be turning into a compost bin inside, perfect loam for the roots of the plants to go into. I was picking 30 to 40 pounds per plant, meaning 60 to 80 pounds per straw bale of my tomatoes last year in my backyard here in Western North Carolina. My tomato harvest scared my wife and I. It was too much. I'd pick 50 pounds a day and lay them out there, and we'd like, okay, now what? But it's a great problem to have because you think of canning and you think of freezing and all of the good eating and sharing with your neighbors. So anyway, give straw bales a try. They're a lot of fun. And Larry, it sounds like you are sold on that as a technique.
Oh, yeah. I much enjoy it. I have some straw bales right next to the back porch, the steps. And I always put cherry tomatoes right next to the steps.
Yeah.
And I just grab a handful when I walk it in and walk it out. It's a nice little treat when you come home or when you go out to get in the car. There's a handful, and you just grab them.
Yes. Great.
I love that process. Well, Paul, you should look into that again. And where would he go to find that information? I'm sorry, Craig.
Just shoot me an email, nctomatoman, all one word, @gmail.com, and I will send you the link to the article that I wrote. You could also just Google Gardener Supply, Craig Lahuli, or straw bale, and it will be the first thing that pops up on Google.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it. George in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, George.
Hello.
Hi, what can we do for you?
My question is this. What type of seed or name for a tomato that you can actually get some flavor out of the tomato? I've noticed that last couple packages of seeds that I bought and I planted, there's nothing there. There's no flavor at all to them. It's like they've been genetically altered or something like that.
Yeah,
that's the question that I have. I'd like to know what I can buy where I can get a good tomato that actually tastes good and has some flavor.
I'm going to toss this to Bjorn in a moment because this is where other people's ratings that you can look at become really, really important. Tomato flavor is definitely a combination of the variety. And because people now have been enjoying heirlooms and doing seed saving for 50 years, some variability has arisen on some of the very well-known varieties. For example, I know that not every vendor is selling the authentic Cherokee Purple anymore because somewhere along the line, crossing has occurred. So I think using, and now I'll pass it over to Bjorn, matching the variety and going for an heirloom like a Cherokee Purple or a Brandywine, ensuring that it does well in your climate. And the flavors also impact a little bit about the culture, how you care for that plant. So Bjorn, maybe give a hint of how those ratings on the SeedLink site will be really helpful for this.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I went to the SeedLink site and went to tomatoes and filtered for flavor to see what would come up right away. Yeah, some interesting things came up. And as we get more and more data, this will be more and more prescriptive. But some of the first ones that came up are heirlooms. There's black cherry, a cherry tomato. I know I grow that one every year because its flavor is amazing. And so that's an heirloom open pollinated variety. It's like maybe a little bit smaller than a ping pong ball or something. Mm-hmm. It's a two-bite cherry tomato. Yeah, and there's some other ones on here. German pink tomato, which is one from Seed Savers Exchange. I think it's one of the first varieties that Seed Savers Exchange was founded on. Yeah, and some other big heirlooms that Craig Cherokee Purple pops up on here. That one's a delicious one. Craig at one point shared seeds with me for that one. Yeah, and so being able to go on SeedLink, and maybe if you want to filter down and if you're looking for a cherry tomato or a slicing tomato, you can filter for those and find one that's going to be more flavorful because they definitely are out there. Craig is like the most knowledgeable person when it comes to that. So,
yeah, I think the other really important thing is to understand what flavor attribute you're looking for. So some people like tomatoes are extremely intense flavor, and that would be me. Other people like tomatoes, and the term they use for me is, I want a tomato that tastes like what my grandfather or grandmother grew. And a lot of the varieties have their acid just popping out there. And when you take a bite, it makes your tongue tingle. Some people are looking for that type. Then there are people that are looking for a very sweet tomato. So if you understand what you like, and then maybe go to that seed-linked array of ratings, and do specific flavor attributes pop in there yet, Bjorn, or is that kind of in the metadata that people may put in?
We're still working on that. We have a vision of having more granular flavor data, because there is the ability to just run tasting trials where people like come and taste a bunch of tomatoes and rate them on our app. But right now it's just limited to like flavor rating 1 through 5. But in the future, I hope that we can get there and really kind of hone in on what Craig's talking about, those different points of flavor. Because like the caller said, if you're going to grow a tomato and it doesn't taste good, it's just it's not worth growing anymore.
You want something that's going to taste good.
So if the caller does want to send me an email, nctomatoman@gmail.com, I have been known to guide people through varieties based on what you like to eat. The last thing I'll say that will complicate things just a little, what you perceive is different from what Larry perceives, which is different from what Bjorn perceives in terms of what even a given variety will taste like. This showed itself at a tomato tasting we did some years ago where we had Black Frumtula and Cherokee Purple, two groups of people. One group of three said Cherokee Purple is better because it tastes like this. The other group said, no, that's not a good tomato. Black Frumtula tastes great because it tastes like that. And so you can get into some real interesting discussions based on your own personal flavor preferences. And Larry's got his hand up.
Yeah, I just wanted to break in to remind everybody who our guests are that you're hearing talking today. Bjorn Bergman heads marketing and communication at SeedLinked, and Craig Lahoulier is a member or a participant in SeedLinked and the author of Epic Tomatoes and also Growing Vegetables and Straw Bales. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest Bjorn Bergman, head of marketing and communication at SeedLinked, and Craig Lahoulier, who is the author of Epic Tomatoes and Growing Vegetables in Straw Bales. Great to have them with us. We've zeroed in on, obviously, on seeds and the various types of vegetable seeds and what SeedLinked can offer you as a gardener. And I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. The number is 1-800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's take another call. Jeff in Berry Mills, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Yes, I was just informed that I can't straw bale garden on my lot anymore this year. I've been doing it for about 5 or 6 years. They had concerns about aesthetics and rodents and stuff, which are unfounded in my book. But I was looking for some tips on container gardening. I got a lot of 5-gallon buckets and a couple of 50-gallon drums that I've cut in half. And I can get some really good sifted compost from the city. So I want some, if you have any tips.
Sure.
And then I wanted to ask you what you thought of Carolina Gold for a tomato.
Sure. So if you loved and did straw bale gardening well, then you can love and do container gardening equally well, because really it has the same type of attention needed to watering and feeding. You've got the same type of a finite area for your roots to go into, and they will fill out that container and that will be it. So you really have to help it along. For a 5-gallon container, you could grow an eggplant plant beautifully and get a high yield on it, a pepper plant, whether it be sweet bell or hot or the frying pepper, or one, I would say a dwarf or a determinate tomato. And the reason that you want to do a slightly larger container for an indeterminate type, the types that grow really tall, is they'll have a much greater root system, much more growth up at the top. And I've found 7 to 10-gallon containers do really well for an indeterminate plant. but you can put potatoes, you can plant greens and lettuce and basil and herbs, and you can do green beans. I've done cucumbers if you can work up a trellis system, or squash. So all of the principles you learn to succeed at straw bales, you can apply to containers, and I think you'll have great results.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate it. And what do you think of Carolina Gold?
If it is the one I'm thinking of, it is a variety that I think Randy Gardner, who lives right down the street from me in North Carolina, he's a great North Carolina state breeder that works on really on late blight, Septoria, some other resistances. It is a really pretty tomato, medium-sized. It is on the firm side because a lot of the local farmers are growing it, and they need a more robust tomato so that it can survive the picking and the handling and bring it to market. But it has a nice flavor, beautiful fruit. Bjorn, did you find that one in your database? You want to chat about it?
Yeah, I searched it on SeedLinked. It is up there. We don't have any reviews on it right now, actually, which over time, as more people grow things and review things, we'll get more data. But yeah, there's two suppliers, Harris Seed Company and Jung Seed Company, that offer that seed on our marketplace. But no one has reviewed it yet, so we can't give perspectives from other growers around the country yet.
I would say give it a try. It's probably a fine tomato. So I tend to give the tomato a wide berth and say it's a really good tomato until somebody comes out and really says, oh, that is not a good tomato. but of the 4,000 that I've grown in my 40 years of gardening, I'd say maybe only 15 or 20 have been the type that you want to spit out politely, lean over the table at a tasting and think, oh God, if I never try that one again, it will be a really good life. But that doesn't happen very, very often at all.
There you go, Jeff. Thanks very much for calling. Oh man, appreciate it. Louise in Dodgeville, we'll go to you. Hi, Louise.
Hi, I have a question. I was wondering if you could help me. I love, love, love Jean Flamme tomatoes. And I'm curious if you're familiar with they. Like, I don't know technically why I like them so much. Like, is it considered a sweet tomato or a spicy? Or if you have any information on the flavor profile, just to help me kind of understand more the tomatoes that I like. And I can take my answer off the air.
All right.
I've grown Jean Flamme quite a bit. I was actually the person that received it. Carolyn Mayle and I received that tomato a long time ago from a fellow named Norbert Perrier in France. Jean Flamme is a variety that I suggest people grow if they like a really tart, full-flavored tomato. It is one of the tartest tomatoes I've ever eaten, and it actually has a flavor characteristic that is not all that common, because most heirloom types, the big beefsteak types, tend to be on the sweet side. So other varieties you would like would be Tiger Tom, Tigerella, Green Zebra for a large tomato, Yellow Brandywine, but really good tart tomatoes, Ozoichka, which is a bright yellow tomato from Russia, you will probably crave and love all of those varieties because they have that same flavor characteristic as Jean Flamme.
There you go, Louise. Now you know. Thank you.
And now we're all hungry. It's like, I want a tomato, and it's it's going to be 14 degrees here tomorrow night, and I want a tomato now. So there you go.
Yeah, and they're a little bit difficult to find, right? Right about
tomatoes that are worth eating are not easy to find. My wife and I are seasonal eaters. We do not eat a tomato between the last one we harvest and the first one we harvest, because why?
Oh man. Well, so I want to repeat again, Bjorn or Craig, the app and how do people get that app?
Yeah. So the SeedLinked app is the business that I co-founded, and folks can go on their desktop computers and go to seedlinked.com and have access to the seed marketplace and search everything. Folks can also download the app on their Apple devices or Android devices by going to the App Store or Google Play, and the app is free and they can download it onto their phones.
And a listener wondered if he can join the trials on the seed-linked site. Do you have to go to the site or elsewhere?
Yep. The best way to do that would be to go to seedlinked.com, and then in the upper right, there's a button that says trials, and click on that, and there's a way that folks can join. There's a few trials, like the broccoli trial and the spinach trial are still open, and folks can enter to be part of those.
Yeah, and those would be fun to, either one of those would be fun to participate in, for sure. Bjorn Bergman is head of marketing and communications at SeedLinked, and Craig LaHoulier is the author of Epic Tomatoes, is one, and the other book, Growing Vegetables in Straw Bales, something I kind of like to do as well. I'm Larry Mealer. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mealer here talking seeds and vegetables today with our guest Bjorn Bergman, head of marketing and communications at SeedLinked, and Craig LaHoulier, who is an author, educator, gardener, tomato lover, also connected with SeedLinked as well. And so if you have questions for them, I hope you'll join in. Would you like some suggestions on vegetable varieties? Questions about seeds? Tomatoes, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you could send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's take a call. Barbara in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
I'm looking for a new variety for a container for an elderly friend, but she wants an indeterminate variety, a slicer. It doesn't have to be a particularly large tomato, and being in a container probably shouldn't be. But do you have any suggestions, something that would do well, an indeterminate in a container?
Sure.
And then I would also, if you could amplify for some of the listeners, I try to help my friends, et cetera, with how culture affects the flavor and also how the weather conditions. Sometimes it's just a bad season for certain crops because it's not the weather they prefer. If you could amplify on, you know, you touched on it, but give some examples for some of the other listeners, I think they'd appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Barbara.
I'm just going to start to get a little more information if you're still there. And so indeterminate, meaning you're willing to let it, you can stake it and let it grow 6, 8, 9 feet tall, because Correct. There are some really good dwarf growing varieties that behave like indeterminates, but they'll stay at about 4 to 5 feet tall and may be perfect for that container size. And there's just so many good varieties. Rosella purple would be one. So if you're looking for a Cherokee purple type tomato, but in a more manageable plant, pretty similar fruit size, pretty similar flavor. Summertime Gold for a yellow one, Loxton Lad or Loxton Lass for an orange one. There's just so many. I mean, I could talk to you about tomato varieties for an hour. You know, you can certainly feel free to drop me an email at nctomatoman@gmail.com. Maybe I can help fit you out a little bit more specifically with what will make you happy. But I'd like to toss it to Bjorn a little bit to talk about that really important second part about how weather culture. There are just, you know, one of the great things about gardening are the number of variables that impact your success. One of the frustrating things about gardening are the number of variables that impact your success. So Bjorn, maybe weather, yeah, culture, and how that changes things.
Yeah, and one thing with SeedLink that I'm excited about in the future is being able to dive more into that weather piece. Because right now we have the ability on the site to filter by hardiness zone, but we all know that it can be more complicated than that. It can be related to the amount of rainfall you get, or when you get rainfall, or what your soil is like. And all the folks at SeedLink, myself included, we're excited in the future to try to dive into those ideas right now. Unfortunately, we don't have those tools yet for everyone, but we know how much it can impact growing with different soil types with different nutrients in there, or having different amounts of rainfall. Because like, from my personal experience, I love growing watermelon in Wisconsin, which isn't always the easiest thing to do. But the flavor can change drastically if depending on how much rain we get in the last month before harvest. If we have a really wet last month, it can be a really like watered down flavor. And if we have a really dry last month, it can be like super sweet and concentrated. And so year to year, there can be these big differences depending on the weather. So I completely get what you're getting at about all those little nuances with knowing about it. And yeah, there's so many variables that I'm excited in the future for SeedLink to be able to kind of tap into that and really help people understand those differences.
Yeah, I think the last thing I'll say is, and I'll tell people this, it doesn't matter that I've written a book on tomatoes, that I've been growing them for 40 years. In any 10-year span, I'll have two great years. I'll have two or three disaster years. The rest will be somewhere in between. I don't think there is such a thing as an expert gardener. There are just gardeners that garden longer and learn more, but none of us gets to where we know everything that there is to learn. So all we can do is the best we can, but Mother Nature can come in, or a deer marauding through our garden, or late blight blowing in from a potato field and its best laid plans. And so for me, gardeners enjoy gardening best if they don't get too hung up in the destination, but they just love every bit of the journey along the way, because that means they may not get exactly the tomato flavor they want or yield they want, but man, have they had a great time every step of the way. And I think that makes for happier, more permanent gardeners thinking about it that way.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I have one thing to add there too. Like for me, in only doing this for 12 years, there's been so many times where there's been not unintended consequences of doing things incorrect, right? Even last year, I like planted everything and a frost was coming and I didn't cover anything and I killed all my tomato plants. And so, but to me, I'm never failing at gardening. It's just always a learning opportunity. And it's an opportunity for me to learn from my mistakes and change something for next year and make it better. And it's always fun to me, just getting my hands in the soil, growing things and growing delicious food and eating it is so much fun that, yeah, you're going to have those ups and downs and trying to take notes and learning and from those
experiences. Go from there.
Yeah,
it's the most important part.
Yep.
Terry in Stoughton, hi, what's on your mind?
Hi, I am calling about, a few years in a row, I had taken some or bought some tomatoes from a fundraiser for a local therapeutic riding center. And these great kids do this, and we end up... I grew them a lot. They were all different varieties, and they all got bottom rot several years in a row.
Blossom end rot, you mean?
Definitely.
Yeah, that's... So growing tomatoes in pots and blossom end rot is a common occurrence.
Yeah, there's kind of a general tone where people are saying it's better to withhold water from your tomatoes to intensify the flavors. And that may work in a garden where the roots can seek the water that they need to keep them from being stressed and allow the calcium to do what it needs to do, which is move through the plant. And cause normal fruit formation. But container gardeners that withhold water, and if you go out in a sunny afternoon and your plants are visibly wilted, essentially you are breaking the ability of the calcium to do its work, and you're inviting and causing blossom end rot. So the people who will never see blossom end rot are the ones that have drip irrigation with emitters on each plant that are titrated to pump exactly the amount of water into that plant so that even on the hottest day, they won't wilt. Now, the good news is, in a straw bale and a container, you literally can't overwater as long as you've got drainage holes in the bottom and you're using a nice, high-quality planting mix. So it's better, and I water my bales once or twice a day and my containers once or twice a day, and we've had the best flavored tomatoes we've ever had in our life. So it's more important to keep the tomatoes stress-free and get quality fruit. If you withhold water, you will, I guarantee you, you will see just tons of blossom end rot everywhere.
And if you water, as you do, twice a day, then fertilizer becomes, or fertilization becomes a key as well.
So I am a once a week feeder, and I'll just use a balanced water soluble and give each plant about a cup and a half of that each week. And I find that that gives the roots what they need, the plants what they need. But each gardener, so you put 50 gardeners in a room and each one are going to use different materials. Some may be strictly organic, some may be more conventional. Some like me are kind of on their way to organic, but I'm not totally strictly yet. They use different times of day. You find what works for you. And the reason that gardening to me is as much of an art and a science is because each one of us impart some of our own creativity and thought into the way that we do things that fits our day, fits our schedule, fits our yard. So, again, if I sound joyous talking about gardening, is because there is no hobby like it. And in these times where we could get really depressed about all that's going on around us, gardening is the bubble of sanity that can bring you peace and joy, and the birds sing, and you know, it's where I go to be happy, to tell you the truth.
Stella in Sturgeon Bay, we'll give you a chance now. Thank you for calling, Stella.
Hi. The gentleman who called in about wanting to convert his front yard of sod and dandelions into a garden.
Yeah.
The suggestion that popped into my mind was put down cardboard. And then my husband, I mentioned that, my husband said, well, what about lasagna gardening? So he could accomplish both killing the sod and you know, rotting it along with growing without putting down a plastic tarp, which might be nice. Possibly the guy who had to remove his straw bales might be able to get away with lasagna gardening, although I think that'd be kind of a stretch. could I just tell you a funny little story?
Go ahead.
My brother-in-law, who was raised in a family of who is not really a gardener and was raised in a family of devoted gardeners, made the crack that gardening is a never-ending endeavor to grow a better weed.
That's great.
There you go, Stella. Well, those were some good tips too, by the way. Good advice.
Yeah. Stella, that reminds me that in our previous house we lived in for 28 years, 95% of the perennials flowers that we bought died eventually, but the 5% that lived told us that they were happy growing in that area. So gardeners have to become very comfortable with the fact that not everything they buy that looks pretty in a catalog or pretty at the garden center, they're going to get into our yard, some of those things, and go, you got to be kidding. You want me to grow here? I'm gone.
Oh, man. Well, Stephen in Milwaukee, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Stephen.
Good afternoon. I'm so glad you guys are talking about tomatoes because this year, based on the success of some elephant ears I had running next to my pond and a little tomato branch that landed in the pot and it grew kind of awesome, I wondered what your thoughts were on putting the pots of tomatoes in the water, not fully submerged, like halfway, so it's getting the nutrients from the fish and everything, and just having it sit in water. I know too much water on tomatoes is bad, but what if they get used to the water and successfully fruit?
The saying is that tomatoes don't like wet feet, meaning that if the roots never get a chance to dry out, they essentially will suffocate. And in fact, if you have put plants in areas where there's heavy clay, and I'll go out and it will look like they need watering, but I'll dig up the roots and they're sitting there in that bowl of water. So that now, if they're in a place where water is being aerated and is moving, essentially you're starting to move toward a hydroponic type of a situation, which is successful for tomatoes. So this is something actually to research a little bit, and I would try it on a very small scale. I mention this for any new gardening technique to anyone. If it sounds really good, try it on a small scale first. That goes for straw bale gardening, container gardening, what you're suggesting. That way you don't have a lot of skin in the game if it doesn't work out, and you can adjust the following year. I have friends that thought straw bale gardening sounds good. I'm going to buy 100 bales. It didn't work out for them, and they actually didn't garden for a few years. So stick your toe in that water, start slow, and let us know how it does, because I'd be very interested in hearing how that works out.
Thank you again for that question. Terry in Robert's email, she has a problem growing beets. They're always puny. She thins them, but they are still small. Any suggestions there?
If she thins them, that's usually the biggest pitfall for gardeners. I know the first time I grew beets for myself, I was like, I planted all these seeds, I'm not gonna pull any of them up, I don't want to pull them up. But for crops like beets and carrots, you have to thin them and keep what is it, like 2 to 4 inches between each plant, or else they'll just stay really, really small. But beyond thinning, I'm not sure why they'd stay really small. It might be something related to a variety. You might want to try a couple different kinds of beets and not just one, and see if it's variety related. Looks like Craig also has a thought.
Yeah. So I've become anybody who's watched what I do when I start my seeds, I plant very, very thickly and then I thin. Uh-huh. And about 10 years ago, I tried this with beets. So I would put 10 or 15 seeds in a little 1.5-inch cell in a plug flat, let them germinate, then get another 50-cell plug flat, fill it with good quality seed starting mix, but I'd plug each beet plant into that, water it well, and just give it about a month. At that point, you've got a root system that you can just pop out through the bottom. And I placed the seeds in my garden of those seedlings every 3 to 4 inches, and I ended up with a perfect crop of perfectly round 3-inch diameter beets. So beets can be thickly planted, can be transplanted into individual cells, brought along, takes about a month, and then just transplant those plugs. I've even done it with carrots, but we won't talk about here. So I like to break rules, and when people say you can't do something, that's what makes me say, yeah, but I'm going to try it. And I found with beets, it works beautiful to get a great yield of perfectly uniform round beets. No thinning, no weeding. You know exactly where your beet plants are. And you just have to be somebody like me that loves to transplant stuff.
Yeah. Craig, you're kind of blowing my mind and what's allowed. I always thought that I needed to direct seed all of that stuff.
No. No. We'll talk, man. I'll set you up.
And I tell you what, there's nothing better than get your grill going and grilled beets. Mm-hmm. You grill a bunch of vegetables and you got beets in there, and you look later and the beets are all gone. Because they're so sweet. And it's wonderful. Sue and Eau Claire, let's give you a chance to join in. Hi, Sue.
Hi, we are turning over our large garden and going to raised bed gardens, and I've got beautiful planters that were homemade, and I know about layering in the bottom with the chicken wire and the weave stuff, but how deep does the soil need to be, and how compact can you plant those?
It's going to be a dependency on what you grow, again, because some... So if on the bottom you've got chicken wire, but you have a chance for roots to get through that and get into the soil, tomatoes can handle that, which are one of the more deeper rooted things. So I think you could get away with 12 inches, 18 inches depth to be able to grow most everything. But I haven't done a whole lot of raised bed gardening. I know with things like basil, beets, you can get away more of an 8 to 10 inch depth. And I know that with raised beds, a lot of the cost is what you put in them. So you don't want to make them too big and too deep, but you do want to be able to give the plants you put in them sufficient room. Bjorn, any thoughts on it?
Yeah, Craig, you're much more of an expert in this world because I grow all of my stuff directly in the soil and
right.
my yard, and most of my experience is from
yeah.
growing right in the soil. So, yeah, I definitely look to you for a lot of the expertise in terms of the containers.
Sure. Yeah, I was thinking about the straw bales again and the tomatoes. You know, sometimes at the end of the season when you're taking those tomatoes, the roots have gone all the way through and
yes.
down into the soil.
Sometimes.
So if you do have a wide enough chicken wire that the roots can get through, then I think you'd probably be okay.
Yep. Yeah, I think 12 inches minimum, though. You do want a good at least a foot for to anchor most plants and make them happy.
Yeah, there you go. And Jenny and Franklin wondered, what do you do with what's left of the straw bale when the straw bales are done at the end of the season? How much dead straw is left and how do you dispose of it? Well, that's an easy one.
What do you do, Larry?
Well, I pile them. I use new every year. So I just pile them all in a big pile and then I get some seed potatoes and I just stick the seed potatoes into the pile of straw, and then I get potatoes.
Yeah.
That's one way to do it.
I mean, when you think about it, your stiff 3 foot long, 1.5, 2 feet tall bale will be about 6 or 8 inches off the ground and collapsed by the time you get through a season.
Yeah.
It's great stuff. It's loam. It's prime compost.
Oh,
and
it's beautiful.
I've spread it in the garden and put garlic in it. I've done potatoes. Right now, mine's all in a pile. We're going to use it to mulch our flower beds, our perennial beds. I'll use it in the containers where I grow my tomatoes. It's like gold. Use it in good health, man. It's great stuff.
Yeah. And Dennis in Two Rivers had called to remind everyone that excess produce is always welcome at your local food pantries.
Yes, they got a lot of our, we know our local food pantry with our tomatoes. So great, great suggestion.
Well, it has been great fun. And go to SeedLinked if you want to get the app, go to your app store and type in SeedLinked. And that will get you to the free app, which is, have been described here by Craig and Bjorn. There's a lot of good information on it and something that you're going to be, that will help you with your garden, for sure. And thank you guys both. It's been a real pleasure. Appreciate it very much. We'll do it again sometime. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for having us on. It's been a great time.
Loved it.
Bjorn Bergman is head of marketing and communications at SeedLinked. Craig LaHoulier is involved with trials with SeedLinked. He's also an author, educator, gardener, and tomato lover. So great to have them with us. Just a reminder, wanted to remind you, you can join my book club. All you have to do is read along with us. This month, we're reading Send For Me by Lauren Fox. Novel set in Germany on the eve of World War II and also in present-day Wisconsin, exploring themes of sacrifice, belonging, and family ties. I'm reading it right now, and it's a dandy. And then on March 24th, Lauren Fox, the author, will be on the show. And again, the novel Send For Me. Well, lots of fun on Garden Talk. Thank you so much for listening, and stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mehler.